back to work, my friends. Great to have you all here. Appreciate you sticking around. About a half hour ready to go yet. And a particular focus on the family. If I can steal that phrase just from my old friend Micah Clark is here for been a while since we've had time to visit. Good morning. Hit me up there, Todd. Hit that button. We got it. Are we there? Are you lit? No, hit that red button right there, my friend. There you go. Now you're good.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate this. And on Friday, you called me a real smart guy. Unfortunately, my mom and my mother-in-law, or my wife and mother-in-law, were not listening. So if you can say that again.
He's a real smart guy, guys. It really is. Not. I'm kidding. I'm only kidding. I did get a funny email from a listener that said, shootings at the Brickyard. Not. I wanted to point that out to Bill Crawford, who decided that the whole thing last weekend was racist because they didn't talk about violence at the Brickyard and at the 500 and said, we've been real short on shootings out there.
We didn't have any gang shootings there.
Let's get to work. Maggie Gallagher, our guest, and her work is available to see at townhall.com. She's been a stalwart in the business of the sanctity of marriage for a long time. Maggie, good morning.
Good morning. Can I throw out the big website I'd like people to
go to? Yes, ma'am.
Because we are organizing 2 million people to fight for the people's right to vote for marriage. And that's the National Organization for Marriage at nationformarriage.org. We're here in Indiana. In a half an hour, we're going to be on the east steps of the Capitol having a rally for marriage. It's part of our 23-city tour. We're taking your voice and your values to the halls of power across this country because, really we need to do this. This is going to be a pivotal election for a lot of things, including marriage.
Now, it's always prevailed sometimes in stunning style when it gets on the ballot someplace.
Yeah, it's never. We know the American people believe that to make a marriage, you need a husband and wife. The ideal for a child is a mom and a dad. And they don't want activist judges or even out-of-touch politicians changing that for our children or our grandchildren. So not only, in Texas and Louisiana and Ohio, but in deep and blue states, in California, in Maine, in Oregon, and Wisconsin, 31 out of 31 times, when you give the people the right to vote, they vote for marriage as one man and one woman.
This is just sociology by Greg here for a minute. But I wonder what the incidents within the ranks of American gays would say. Because I have a notion that there's an awful lot of them that go, are you kidding? they have their private choices that they make. As a matter of fact, I've had gay men call this show and say, listen, I mean, I got a mom and I got a dad. My sexual preferences are my own, but those don't turn me into somebody's mommy.
I've had that experience too. We know that the leadership of gay and lesbian organizations is rock solid on this, and probably the majority of gays and lesbians are too. But I had a young guy call me up when I was debating Andrew Sullivan, who's a big gay marriage advocate, and he said, this is the darling of the gay intelligentsia. It has nothing to do with what I want. And we do know that the number of people who enter gay marriages where they're available is really, really tiny. It's like 2, 3, 4, 5% of gay and lesbian people end up in a legal marriage, even when that's an option. So it's strange in a lot of ways that this has emerged as a marquee issue.
Well, let me tell you,
the threat here in Indiana is real, and it comes from two places. We saw in Iowa, they said, oh, no, that's never going to happen here. But the only way to really protect marriage is to get your politicians to take the issue, a marriage amendment, on the ballot and give the people of Indiana a chance to decide this issue. And we now have a new threat from activist federal judges as well that people aren't really focusing on.
You think here in Indiana?
Oh, yeah. Sure. We got two cases now. We have a case where a Boston judge, a federal judge in Boston, just overruled the definition of marriage in the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, right? Which says marriage is the union of one man and one woman. He said, oh, no. Our Constitution requires that we recognize same-sex marriages in Massachusetts. So that case is wandering through the courts. The Obama administration is pretending to defend it. That's why we're really concerned about it. It's a sham defense of the law. And then there's the Prop 8 case in California, which if we expect the federal judge there, who's made his biases very clear, to overrule Prop 8, again, to claim that our federal constitution requires same-sex marriage. And if that happens, that's going to affect the marriage laws here in Indiana as well as across the United States.
You have to wonder where they find that. I've read that constitution a couple of times, and I search in vain for those references.
I had this debate about judicial activism. Some people say, oh, well, it just depends on whether you like the ruling. And I'll tell you, here's the difference. When conservatives applaud, like, the gun ruling, which found that there is an individual right to bear arms in the Constitution. Usually you just read the Constitution and it's in there. There's a right to bear arms. Whereas when liberals take over and try to use the Constitution to advance their values, it's things like gay marriage, which you read that Constitution from front to back and you're like, I don't see anything about gay marriage.
How do you
here.
Do that? And, and what's interesting is, and Micah, you see this in your efforts and your work with families across the state of Indiana. We don't need more challenges.
No, I mean, we know what happens when we create or when we have fatherless or motherless homes. And the government should always help motherless and fatherless homes, but we don't intentionally create them, which same-sex marriage, by definition, always denies a child an opposite gender parent.
Maggie, let's talk about that for a second, because you'll hear, yeah, but that kid would have been their whole life in a foster home and never had any parents, but we give them love and affection. And, you know, they go through the whole song and dance. What's the right, the righteous, the logical, the common sense answer to the objection that they'd be in the orphanage if it weren't for us?
Well, that's really about adoption. It's not about marriage, and it's a more complicated issue. I happen to believe that if we did enough recruitment, we could probably find a lot more married mother and father families. But marriage is about the ideal. When you when you do gay marriage, it's not just about what Adam and Steve do off in their own, and that's their business. It's about what the government of Indiana is going to teach the next generation about marriage. And it's going to say the word husband can mean either a man who takes responsibility for a woman and her children, or a guy who wants to remain in a sexual union with another dude for the rest of his life. The ideal that a child needs a mother and father will get redefined by our own government, by these judges, as a form of bigotry.
Well, and
like racism. Imagine Christian teachings about marriage will be redefined by our own government as the equivalent of racism. That's pretty wrong, and it's going to have a lot of consequences.
Now, across the Great Plain here, how many states are on the ballot or expect to have balloted referenda this year on such propositions?
This year, we're focusing on electing politicians because the places where you have the low-hanging fruit, where you can just get, you know, referendum, have people sign signatures, get it on the ballot like we did in California and Maine, those people have already voted to protect marriage. So now what we found is that Tim Gill and a bunch of very wealthy gay men are pouring billions of dollars into state legislatures to try to block marriage amendments. That's what they did in Iowa. I think that's part of the story here in Indiana about why we don't have a marriage amendment on the ballot. And it's certainly what happened in New Hampshire. So we're one of the things we want to do with our 2 million for marriage at nationformarriage.org is raise the money, collect the activists, point them at these out-of-touch politicians, and elect politicians who will respect marriage and also respect our right to vote for marriage.
Micah, what's been the talk about the history a little bit inside of our legislature? I know that Brian Bosma was strong on the thing, and the brief and enlightened period when we had some adult supervision over there, we made some gains. But it's been unsuccessful so far.
It's very tough in Indiana because you have to pass an amendment two separate times, with an election in between among two separately elected legislatures. The Senate has passed this five times. The House has passed it one time when the Republicans controlled the House. Four other times, Pat Bauer or Scott Peleth or Terry Austin out of Anderson blocked it.
Did she cry when she did it?
She did. She claimed that it was...
She cries a lot.
She claimed that it would increase domestic violence.
She's not one of those Mama Grizzlies.
No, she's a whiner.
Hey, you know, here's...
I mean, I'm not kidding. She cries like on cue.
Well, and the case there was she claimed that this would increase domestic violence, which the rulings... It was a bogus argument. Everybody knew it. She had legal reviews we gave her saying that was bogus, but it helped... you know, it played well in the media.
The bottom line is the reason you don't have a marriage amendment in Indiana is the Democrat Speaker of the House has blocked it.
That's right.
Right? So you need to elect at this point, and I like to think marriage doesn't have to be a partisan issue, but here in Indiana, you have to elect enough Republicans to get a Republican Speaker of the House, and then we'll have a marriage amendment on the ballot, and it'll take a couple of years to do it, but that's what's blocking it.
And there are a lot of Democrats on the floor who'd vote for this. If they were allowed to by their speaker, we would get 60, 65 votes, maybe more. But the speaker doesn't want that. So we need a new speaker.
He's obligated in other directions. That's for sure. Well, we have a very different perspective from a phone caller. Tricia is going to – I'm going to get her lined up with you guys. Let's see what she's got to say. Tricia, you're up. What's going on?
Hi. I love you, Garrison, and listen quite a bit. I'm a lesbian. I've been with my partner for 23 years. We have an 18-year-old son who's about ready to go to Ball State and a 13-year-old daughter who is a great student and loves to play softball. So in defense of, you know, needing moms and dads, I guess I agree. I've given my kids good male role models. My son even had a very good friend of mine who was his dad. And so I do agree that, you know, kids need to have male and female role models deeply embedded in their lives. But, you know, my mom and dad were married for 64 years before my mother passed away, and I loved them both dearly. They did the best they could, but there was no way were they ideal parents. They were as good as they could be. You know, it wasn't until the day my mother died that I realized that my father even really loved her. So not always do male and female give kids ideal. And
I don't think ideal is a part of the equation, Tricia. I mean, well, you know, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory. It's not exactly a question for ideal. Maggie?
Well, I do think so. Thank you for calling. And I think everyone who's struggling hard to raise good kids and succeeding deserves our respect and concern. But not everyone who's, I mean, I was an unwed mother for 10 years, right? I think I did a pretty good job with my son. But I will tell you, I do believe that children are hunger for and long for the love of a man as well as a woman, of their father as well as their mother, and that it is an ideal that men and women come together to raise their children in love. And goodness knows we all fall short in being the parents that we ought to be to our children. But if you lose the roadmap, if you lose the idea that the two people who make the baby, they're supposed to stick around and raise the baby too, if you lose the idea that marriage protects children mostly, almost entirely, as far as we can tell from the evidence, because it helps make it more likely that mothers and fathers cooperate and raise their children together and do their best to love each other. And I will tell you, even when they fall short, and I appreciate that you don't necessarily want to tell the whole, all of three quarters of Indiana about your parents' shortcoming. I respect that. But that also, even when they fall short, when men and women don't make the attempt, they don't try to create one home for their children, there's a lot of suffering and a lot of damage that's created.
Well, it's a pretty broad, and thanks for your call, Tricia. Appreciate your phone call and your perspective as well. And I know you guys got to go in a minute, but Mike, I come back to you for a moment. Again, I say we have so many influences and so much stress on what we know to be the only mousetrap that's ever worked worth a hoot for raising kids. I mean, you know, Tricia works hard, and it sounds like she's got her a couple of good kids there. Whether they're good in spite of the fact that they didn't have a dad in the home or because that she was smart enough to go find a man to be a role model and to be in there, it's a whole lot easier to do that when it's dad. And we see what's happening in society where we've seen the family fall apart.
Well, and what we're talking about is not really Tricia. We're talking about public policy and setting the standard for the government, for the state of Indiana, for the nation. And what concerns me is if the government says that, for example, Sally and Susie are the same as Sally and Steve, then Steve doesn't really matter anymore. He's interchangeable. He can be dropped. And as a dad of a 7-year-old and 8-year-old, I really see every day how my wife parents differently because she is a woman and how I parent differently as a man. And really, as men and women, how our marriage, it's not a carbon copy.
We don't need more messages to men that they're not necessary to family life, right? We need to be working harder to raise young men to be responsible family men. And a society that says, hey, you know, moms and dads, that's nothing important about the natural family. Any two people are just the same. I think that job's going to get a lot harder. And frankly, either I'm a bit of a sexist on that. I think fathers are really important. But I'll tell you, more important is, what about endorsing motherlessness as the ideal for society? I do not believe that that's the message that we want to send with among the challenges our youth have about finding their way to this, you know, to a good family life. We don't need to redefine marriage. And, you know, if you're within listening distances of the east steps of the Capitol, come out and join us so we can make your message heard.
Excellent. Maggie, thanks for being here.
Appreciate
the hard work you're doing. Micah, come back and see me, buddy.
Thanks, Greg.
God bless.
It.
Quick break. Back with a few final thoughts and maybe a call or two. Stick around.